Stockwell.
It's Dale Williams sitting in for Jack Stockwell.
Well, yeah, I believe the actual fee was $174, and that's not including the actual business owners in the unincorporated areas, which is, again, about 250,000 people total, where they created this special tax financing district, a private corporation in California who's doing that. Because, you know, those business owners are actually getting a larger fee, and I'm not sure what that fee is yet. However, if they don't pay their fee, again, they will lose their business license.
Right, and we don't want to give away the store too much this morning, as I darted out to take care of a technical detail that I forgot to deal with. I like to humanize, you know, the program here and show people my flaws. It's not hard to do. No, yeah, I'm glad you just put that out there, Clint, and it's a little bit of a hook. But we're not going to ask Jim Winder, Doug Wright type questions. We're going to ask him some you know, tough journalistic questions. It should be a good repartee, and it should be a learning interval at 7:10 a.m. But for right now, for this hour, it's the 67th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. And 1944, June 6th. And it calls to mind the inestimable sacrifices made by the American military to sort of keep things together here, to keep this component of Western society operating more freely than the people in continental Europe wanted it to be. The Germans wanted a more authoritarian sort of government and organization of society. And it was decided to oppose them, and you know, I'm kind of glad they were there because they knocked down the Russians, who would have been even worse. And so in the aftermath of the whole thing, at least half of Europe maintained some kind of level of freedom of movement for its average people, for its common folk. It's a little bit more complicated than they presented the history to you, the idea that Russians good guys, Germans bad guys, and all that. It's more complex than that. And I'm not here to honor anything about the prescription that the German government had for the way society should be organized, but you do have to recognize that without the Germans knocking back the Russians, gosh, you know, we might have had more Russia in Western Europe. So I prefer neither of them, neither of their formulas for the way mankind should operate. And but the thing is, it was a global war, Clint. And we were fighting for our survival in the Pacific, without a doubt. And it's 67 years ago. Now, I want to talk about something that's going on in Utah now in that context. This terrible sacrifice. About a half a million American servicemen died. They say about 425,000. 50 to 70 million human beings died during this period of World War II, and the run-up to World War II in the 30s, you had millions and millions of Chinese dying. I mentioned last time I was on the radio the fact that the Chinese, for example, when they helped the Doolittle Flyers right at the outset of the war, the Doolittle Flyers coming off of the aircraft carrier Hornet went over and made sort of a token bombing of Tokyo and the environs of Tokyo in B-25 bombers, army bombers launched off a little aircraft carrier, a smaller American aircraft carrier called the USS Hornet, as I recall. And then some of them crash-landed and were in an extreme condition trying to survive on the coast of China. And Chinese peasants helped them survive, helped them get back to America ultimately, the United States ultimately. And for that effort, the Japanese rewarded the Chinese with a summary execution of 250,000 people for that one incident. That is the nature of the enemy that we were dealing with back then, and thank God for the United States Navy that kicked their behinds ultimately. And the Army was involved quite a bit too. So then we had the United States victorious and able to sketch its own history, to write its own script pretty much. And here we are 67 years later, and I want to play you a little audio here that, to me, symbolizes the situation we are in, symbolizes what we have done with the latitude with the freedom granted us through the sacrifice of all those soldiers, all those young boys. Let's listen to this. This is a little bit of audio from Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, who does quite a bit of good work in other fields, kind of dropping the ball here.
Welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. We begin today with Utah, where an anonymous group has distributed a list that is spreading terror and outrage among the Latino community. The list includes names, addresses, workplaces, phone numbers, birth dates, and in some cases, social security numbers of some 1,300 people that the group alleges are undocumented. The list was sent to law enforcement officials, state lawmakers, and the media, and it urges that those on it be immediately deported. All the names are Latino, and they include over 200 children and the due dates for six pregnant women. Utah Governor Gary Herbert has called for an investigation to see if the list was compiled by someone with access to state databases containing personal information.
The list arrived at media outlets with a letter signed by concerned citizens of the United States that says, quote, "Our group observes these individuals in our neighborhoods, driving our streets, working in our stores, attending our schools, and entering our public welfare buildings." It goes on to blame undocumented immigrants for rising crime, alcohol and drug abuse, and domestic violence, and adds, quote, "We plan to provide your office with new lists on a continual basis and request, no, insist, that your agency take immediate and forceful action to the individuals on this list and begin deportation now." Well, for more on this story, we're joined now from Salt Lake City, Utah, by Tony Apias, the director of Proyecto Latino de Utah. He is the former director of the Utah Office of Hispanic Affairs and has seen a copy of the list. Tony Apias, thanks so much for joining us. What is the response in Utah, in your community?
Good morning. In our community, has been terrorized by this list. Throughout yesterday, we received dozens and dozens of calls, emails, requests, whether or not their names have been on the list from the members of the Latino community. And so our community is in a state of fear at this time.
Well, Tony Apias, some of the press reports indicate that the list was originally sent in April to some government agencies and then only to the media this past week. But there was nothing apparently said by government officials about the list in the last few months, have there?
Right. It appears that the group got frustrated because the ICE, the immigration arm of the of Homeland Security that does the deportations, they weren't doing anything to round them up, I guess, in their view. And so they figured that by sending out to media outlets, to the governor's office, to a dozen law enforcement agencies, they figured, okay, well, we're going to have to take the laws into our hands by allowing these law enforcement agencies to do it. And so that's how this whole thing began over the last couple of days.
Where do you think this list came from?
This list came from a state agency, as we have called, as I have personally called, a dozen or so families. There's a pattern in the type of information that can be gathered. They indicate on the letter that they've been watching people in their neighborhoods, driving, etc. That's not what happened. What we believe it happened is we have state workers who are sympathizers or members or friends or associates of anti-immigrant groups here in Salt Lake or in the state of Utah, and are angry with this whole issue of immigration. And so because they have access to sensitive data, this information, when families apply for services, such as Medicaid or other types of services, then they get all the social information about the families, and that's how they were able to compile the list. And so, this list is so much more sophisticated for someone like these anti-immigrant groups to just say, okay, Tony Apias lives at this address, and then his friend lives at that address. It's members of Latinos that live from north to south, east to west in the state, so in every town.
Which department do you think? Which state department do you think it came from?
Well, right now, there was some indication yesterday afternoon that the Workforce Services, which is a one-stop shop department where everyone goes.
Okay, so we know now. This is, of course, an older piece of audio from Tony Apias Yapias. Sorry, I want to be very correct in that pronunciation. All the other people seem to be at great pains to make sure and pronounce his name right. It's older. We know now, you know, the individuals, at least alleged, who have released that data and from whence it came from, what office of the government, what department of the government, and all the rest of it. I've got another piece of audio that is complimentary to this. We'll play that on the other side. Remember, this is an ex-government official, Tony Yapias, who is kind of the leader of the Reconquista, in my mind, in the state of Utah, and probably in your mind as well. Now, he is calling for jail time for the people who released this data. And I'm interested in your opinion this morning as to, you know, what you think of the landscape of your country when people who are so, you know, who refer to patriots and patriotic organizations as anti-immigrant groups, who refer to the act of releasing this data out of desperation, I would think, as a terrorist act, and who feel entirely comfortable and buttressed by other public officials in office, sitting public officials, entirely comfortable with the idea of demanding a sentence and an outcome for a court action
AM
that hasn't happened.
AM 630, K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
All right, good morning, good morning, good morning. I'm glad you're with us. It's 7:24. I'm waking up. I guess you're waking up this morning on this beautiful Monday. It's the 67th anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Normandy, the coastline of France. And, wow, that was one ugly morning. And we're talking about this morning. I've got Clint Richardson here with me, the director, the chairman of Utah We Are Change. And we're just kind of taking our time and sizing things up. What we're going to do here for a little bit is play backyard anthropologist. And there's a, you know, there's a politically correct way of describing what's going on and what is demonstrated by these pieces of audio that I'm going to play you. We've got one more to go. And then, you know, there's plenty of data going on. We have Tony Yapias demanding jail time for the people who released the list of people who are probably here illegally and are either in the employ of the government or getting government benefits. A kind of act of desperation, a voice crying in the wilderness, in my mind. Somebody had the guts to do that. I want to congratulate them. Tony Yapias and company and the rest of the Reconquista cadre want those folks in the jail or the prison or whatever. Put them in the dangerous felon section of the local jail where maybe they can get beat up a little bit. Anyway, their life will never be the same. There's nothing quite like having to sleep with one eye open for 6 or 8 months or a year or whatever. But that politically correct term, the decline of the West, you know what that really means? It means the decline of white society. It means that white society is culturally gutted, defenseless. It's a grape waiting to be stomped on, and we're not supposed to say that. We're not supposed to note the fact that this part of North America is a kind of a, it's an extension of European culture. It's the white folks. But we should be able to say that. And, of course, it's white folks with a nice complement of people of other races in what used to be a pretty stable ratio. And for the most part, we got along. And the other folks provided not only a different visual input, but they provided some, metaphorically speaking, color to the culture as well. And good food, Clint. But that stability has been thrown out with this thing, which is the Reconquista. It is the colonization. It's a massive influx, it's an erasure of that stability we had.
It is, and you know what's most interesting is when you know the history of immigration, the true history of immigration since the beginning of this country. This country would have been nothing without it, and I think every person in this country probably realizes that. We've gone over into another sphere of immigration.
Ah, this is a different thing.
Yeah, well, and you know, to add to that, if I were to go to Mexico or if I were to go to any other sovereign country who has a proud cultural heritage, which is something that America seems to be missing.
How about a functional cultural
heritage? Well, and functional.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to go to Mexico right now and I were to stand on the street and demand that Mexico give me medical insurance and support my kids and do, I would be thrown in jail. I would not be, I mean, maybe deported, but chances are I'd be thrown in jail. They do not put up with that type of thing in these countries. You do not go to any country and demand to be part of that country. It just doesn't happen that way, but
well,
it happens here.
Right, and we're trying to throw some audio at people as I thumb through the button-pressing mode here. We'll take some calls. We're going to have Jim Winder on here, or Sheriff Winder, next hour. But, Clint, we got some more audio that demonstrates this thing. What I'm trying to say, what I think you're trying to say now that I've heard you talk a little bit, is that, and again, we're playing anthropologists. We're watching the decline of a society. Would you think it's too radical a statement, Clint, to say that the United States, so-called, is like a grape begging to be stomped? It's like a greasy fried nothing? You know what I mean? It's like those things they used to feed you in the cafeteria at school that they were like potato greasy things, you know, but there was nothing inside. You just crunch them. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. But except the problem is that it's not a clear. It's covered in a paper bag, and the grapes, you know, us grapes don't see how we're being squashed. They don't see because the media is completely subverted. And so, yeah, the grapes, as they're being squashed, cannot see what's squashing them, even though they see the inside of the bag squashing them.
Subverted is the word. I mean, and there is no more subverted media than Utah network media. That it is just unbelievable the way they will put these Reconquista strongmen, these chiefs, these chieftains of the Reconquista, put them on the air as the moral arbiters. Where are the Utah Minutemen? Where are the other organizations? They exist. The counterparts to Mr. Yapias do exist in the white segment of this nation of Utah, but they can't get any traction. And there is no price to be paid by that media in Utah from its consumers. That's what is so troubling to me. Anyway, we're trying to defend the United States of America and Utah from its government. That's what we're trying to do here this morning. Oh, I don't know. We're not defending anything, but we're being trying to play the part of mouthpiece for the patient that barely has a heartbeat, the resistance to what's going on in the government media complex in this country. Let's talk to one of the, or let's not talk to, let's listen to some audio. This is from last year, I give you a fair warning, all the way back last year. I had never seen this interview, though. It's an interview with Attorney General, Utah Attorney General Mark Shurtleff, on ABC 4 News, the local media. Listen to this action.
Exclusive tonight, Utah's Attorney General is calling on the LDS Church to come out in opposition to Arizona's controversial immigration law. And Mark Shurtleff also tells ABC 4 that unless the church does so, a similar law is likely to pass here. Our Chris Van Oker has the exclusive story. Chris?
Utah Attorney General Mark Shurtleff is LDS. And while he makes clear he's not speaking for his church, he is worried about what will happen if the church doesn't speak out for itself.
Look, it's not easy for me to say that.
What isn't easy for Attorney General Mark Shurtleff to say, but he does, is that unless the LDS Church speaks out against Arizona's new immigration law, one like it will also pass in Utah.
Are you saying you want the church to come out against the Arizona law?
I think that would help stop an Arizona-style law here if they would definitely come out against the Arizona-style law.
According to Utah's Attorney General, the LDS Church now has an immigration perception problem. And it does, he says, because the legislator who sponsored Arizona's new tough immigration law is LDS.
I have a lot of friends and associates in the Attorney General of Arizona I speak to all the time. There has been a lashback against the LDS Church because it was sponsored by Mormons.
Shurtleff also says he hears over and over again from other Mormons about the LDS Church's 12th Article of Faith. It says, quote, We believe in obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law. Utah's Attorney General also hints that LDS legislators may be among those talking to him about this.
They consistently get on me saying, if I'm not out there rounding up every illegal alien in the state, then I'm not obeying my own article of faith.
As for the LDS Church, it has not taken an official position on immigration. But in an earlier statement, it did urge compassion when dealing with this issue. Reporting live from Temple Square.
Okay, a little bit dated news, but I'd never heard that audio. I never realized that the AG had been so transparent, Clint, about the issue. I hate to laugh. I mean, it's just funny to find yourself in this position. I mean, if it wasn't for you and I right now this morning, this is the only time I think this morning that this worldview that you're seeing demonstrated, exhibited, is going to be exhibited on Utah media and the whole Wasatch Front and the whole Intermountain West. I mean, there might be a guy down in Cedar City, I've heard, that will talk a little bit like this. But did I get that right from the AG? Unless the LDS Church, and this is not about Mormonism, by the way. I'm talking about the AG. I'm talking about defending ourselves from the agents in government, the agents of the Reconquista. Unless the LDS Church says something, and this is last year, this is 2010, the AG said this, and by the way, that was an audio clip from ABC4 News here in Salt Lake City. Unless the LDS Church does something, a similar law, or says something, I should say, a law similar to that in Arizona is likely to be passed here. Oh, heaven forfend! That would be awful, Clint! You know, I know there are problems with it because it's mixed up with the real ID, and we really don't like the Arizona law. But you see, it's the sentiment that they're worried about. It's that the white folks and the third, fourth generation Latinos and people of other races who've been here legally, it's them getting up on their hind legs and actually trying to defend this country. Ooh, bad.
Well, yeah, there's a lot else to be said about that when a government official is asking the church to step in and save things. That's a bit frightening for me too. But
wow.
You know, one of the things that's being played here is the most common thread is the empathy card. You know, we must, you know, feel sorry for people, but I just want to say that, you know, Dennis Kucinich is kind of now infamous for saying there is no such thing as illegal immigration. And I tend to agree, because if you are a foreign invader into a country, you are not an immigrant. You have come into the country without permission, and you cannot be illegal if you are not bound by that country's laws. So the term illegal immigration should not be used. I believe that foreign invader should be used, because these people are from all over the world, not just Mexico.
Right.
Okay, when I lived in New York City for 4 or 5 years, I tell you, half of my friends were illegal. And we're talking Brazil, we're talking Sweden, mm-hmm. Israel, we're talking every country I can think of that I knew friends that were out of the country. Good people who wanted to come to America, and they did so legally and then stayed longer than their visa allowed. But these are foreign
invaders
who are not even going the first step of getting a visa and then letting it expire.
And they are operating in a lawless environment. And I, as an individual, I have no obligation to this thing calling itself the Utah or the United States government. You can come over to where I live and try to take me into custody, or maybe you'll succeed. You know, I'm not going to go out and look for trouble with you, but I absolutely do not recognize your authority, because you are operating under the direction of some authority that has nothing to do with me, with my consent, with my electoral participation. It's a completely separate entity, both at the federal and the Utah level. And that's what Larkin Rose tries to point out in that great book, The Most Dangerous Superstition. Clint, I owe them nothing. I owe them no allegiance, whatsoever.
It's even worse than that when you really sit down and think about it. Because let's take both situations here. Let's say you're at home, and again, we're not just talking about the one country here. We're talking about any country that wants to come into America. So let's not just focus on Mexico or just South America, because we're talking, I mean, the amount of Russians in this country is amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most of them are very good people that I would welcome into my home. But let's say you're at home one day and someone comes into your home as a foreign invader and attacks you. And let's take both scenarios here. Let's say that you hurt that person. Well, see, okay, wait a minute. Now, are you going to get in trouble? Because, you know, nowadays you can't defend yourself in your own home
right.
without being dragged off to jail. But wait a minute. This person is not considered a legal entity in the United States. Who's going to get in trouble? Well, the illegal, as we call them, probably will get off scot-free because he's not really within the legal system. You, however, have somehow created a crime right. against something that is not in the legal system. So it's a really confusing. And then vice versa, if that person hurts you, do you have a legal recourse against that person if they're not in the legal system?
No,
no you don't.
We've seen it again and again.
No,
one,
you
of the,
don't.
One of the longtime hosts on this radio station, Barbara Jean, gets T-boned on the way to the station. Again, I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, gallows humor, if nothing else, right? Has her car destroyed by an illegal alien female driver. There were no consequences for the other driver. Other than, I guess, she couldn't drive away, or maybe she did drive away. But, you know, I've seen it again and again. It's just, it is a lawless environment unless you are the object of the Department of Homeland Security. You're the type of person that that agency was conceived to scrutinize, which is the American, particularly white Al-Qaeda. Now, Clint, people think I'm nuts. That perhaps people who are not hooked up with the alternative media, but that's what this national security state, Mr. Shurtleff is a great local example of it, that's what they're all about, is to intimidate any kind of, well, incipient American nationalism. That's the evil. That's why you see the corporate media putting Mr. Yapias in front of you all the time and other members of the ecclesiastical media government complex. That is the concern. That is their institutional concern, that you, Clint Richardson, me, Dale Williams, you, the listener, might get up on your hind legs and say, you know, I'm going to do something about this before I'm in the grave. Stay with us.
AM 630, K-Talk. Utah's most experienced talk radio team. Now at k-talk.com.
Okay, I think that's us, 7:42. Don't forget, Sheriff Winder will be joining us, God willing, the river don't rise, at about 8:05 a.m. It's a beautiful day. Did I mention that? It is a beautiful day. We're going to take calls now. If you want to get on K-Talk and speak live over the air, I would dial 801-254-5855 on the Jack Stockwell radio program this morning. There are other lines. If you're in Utah County, 801-470-5855. In Weber, North Davis County, up north of Salt Lake, that is, 801-670-5855 gets the job done. You know about Tradio, right? I just want to make sure you know something about Tradio. Tradio is a gas. It's actually very fun to listen to. It's a highly rated show. Do you need some extra cash? Maybe you have some old treasures around the house you'd like to trade for new stuff. Buy, sell, or trade just about anything with Utah's oldest radio, one-stop bargain shop, Tradio. Check out Tradio Todd this Sunday from 8 to 10 on Utah's number one live local two-way talk station, AM 630 K-Talk. That's right, Tradio, and it is Sunday morning, 8 to 10. That's 8 to 10 a.m. Let's talk to Dwayne. We'll take calls now. Dwayne, what's on your mind this morning?
Yeah. Well, okay, I was just kind of listening, and I'm going to get out of here, but I heard the fellow there quote a thing from Kucinich. He said that Kucinich said that we don't have an illegal immigration problem. Well, he didn't say the complete quote. he cut that off.
Okay.
That quote by Kucinich was, we don't have an illegal immigrant problem. We have an illegal employer problem. That was what he said.
Well, I think you're making a good point, Duane. And Clint, I mean, you're talking about the slave trade, right?
Well, here's the thing. You have to go back a little bit. One of the reasons those people coming here is because they don't have any work down there. And what caused that was, one thing, NAFTA, and then companies like Monsanto, who grows wheat or corn very cheap because your tax money is paying for it. Then they send this corn to foreign countries and they sell it cheaper than their farmers can grow it there. And that's one of the things that's been happening over the last years in Mexico. Corn was their number one product. Well, Monsanto, as even today, is sending, I can't remember how many thousand tons of corn into Mexico, and they're selling it cheaper than they could grow it. And as a result, there are no farms down there anymore, no place to work.
Well, Clint and Duane, our caller Duane, you know, this is a hammer and anvil operation. It's looked at from a military perspective. The idea is to create an instability and an economic level, you know, a level of deprivation in Mexico that drives these people up here. No question of that. I mean, the standard of living of Mexican farmers is lower than Egyptian farmers.
Yeah, well, there are very few of them anymore. People that have gone down there to check on this, very few farms down there anymore because they can't compete with American corn that's subsidized by your tax money.
Indeed, I see the whole thing as big wheels a-turning, Duane. I think that's what you're saying.
What it is, it's a deal. The corporations want this, and it's not going to stop as long as the corporations can come out on top.
Well, and we also have to understand.
They make it so they got no place to work. So they come up here, and they can hire them for less money than they can hire the people who live here. It's a circle.
Yeah, we also...
One way to stop it tomorrow is if they made it so that if you got caught hiring an illegal, it costs you $1 million.
What would Tyson...
in prison.
How would Tyson Chicken operate?
Well, they'd just have to go start paying their people more money and help our economy.
Right, and that's why there's a middle class in this country, because in the 1930s, people got out in front of belt-fed machine guns out in front of the Ford plant and said, we're going to work for your lousy $5 a day anymore.
Right, exactly. And that's what they're by doing this, the corporations they don't want a middle class.
Well, my friend, we cannot just, again, I'm very adamant about not blaming corporations as much as we blame the shareholders of those corporations, which is hands down always government. Government is allowing this type of action to happen. Government is actually the ones that built up Mexico way back in the 80s and 90s. Everything used to be made in Mexico. Then they crashed the peso. Then they built up Russia. Now they've built up China. And now we've got $14 trillion invested in China, and all of our American companies are there making their products and importing them back here. So blame the government for this. This is a world conquista.
Duane, you're aware, I'm sure by now, if you've been listening to this program for a while, that government, I'm just guessing, Clint, government probably owns 79 to 85% of Monsanto. Were you aware of that, Duane?
No, Monsanto owns that much of the government.
It's hard to know which direction ownership flows.
Have to do is watch and find out.
Hey, Clint, comment on. Thanks, Duane. Thanks for your call, Duane. We're going to open that line.
Duane, all I have to do and all you have to do is pull up any pension fund report or any state holdings list, which shows the stock investment that government has in corporations, their stock portfolio, and you will see hundreds of millions of stock investment in each government, over 230,000 governments across the nation, thousands of pension funds. So trust me when I say, and I'm about to release a documentary on this really quickly, that government owns Monsanto. Do you think Monsanto can operate outside of the law? Do you think anybody, do you think the Federal Reserve operates outside of the law? No. It's just not true, and we need to start putting the blame where it belongs, which is our government who regulates and deregulates these industries.
Yeah, my own model for understanding all this is still evolving, Clint. I'm not ready to call it corporate or government. It's some third entity.
It's a symbiotic relationship between every single thing out there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a fabric. It's an interwoven, well, yeah. You know, there's all kinds of metaphors. Let's try Salt Lake City. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Have you ever read H.G. Wells' Time Machine?
I think I read it when I was a teenager, but I do know about the Eloi. I do know about the template for deracination. Ooh, that's too big a word for radio. I know about the little brown folk who lived up in the trees, and that H.G. Wells was trying to tell his readers that. And that's not any aspersion against a race or anyone of with more a darker complexion than mine. It's just that, for whatever reason, the elites plan on that being the type of human being, the Eloi, as described in that book, as being the kind of humans they want on their global plantation, on their new Eden, and they're going to jet around and have a good time, and they're going to deny all access to the glorious, beautiful, acceptable parts of this world, to those Eloi who are going to work in factories and, I don't know, take care of the toiletry needs of the Queen of England, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. We're being trained as the Eloi. We're, it's a combination of things like being an Eloi, reducing our language and our education, so that we're just mere automatons to serve at the will of the master. It just drives you nuts.
But why, caller, why is it that in the state of Utah, when you have the mechanics so out in the open, the mechanics who are making this happen, like the Attorney General, like Governor Herbert, why is the respect for authority so overweening that it actually covers incumbency? I mean, these people seem to think that if someone is in office, well, my gosh, they wouldn't be in office unless God wanted them there. And therefore, don't get rough with them. You know, don't be disrespectful. you know what I'm saying? It's a strange place to live that way.
It's unfortunate, but it's been about 150 years of institutionalization of that. You don't question, and that carries over into the civic side of life too.
Well, nature's gonna pay folks back for having that attitude, because that's not a survival. That's not part of the survival repertoire of a people who know who they are and want their kids and grandkids to survive.
Nature is in the process of paying back, just like, you know. Don't be afraid of globalism. Globalism is already upon us.
That's
you know,
right.
This kind of thing.
Caller, carry on.
Okay, I was just going to say, like you're saying, it's going to come back and bite us, and bite us bad, and it's going to be interesting who's last man standing.
yeah. Well, time to go to Montana. That's my answer. Thanks, caller.
I think it'll be the cockroaches.
Right. I think an attorney general. Gosh, we're picking on him. He's going to come back down here and give me the boot in the backside. But Attorney General makes a statement like that, saying, well, we've got to do something. We've got to get the church, the ecclesiastical people, to take a stand, or otherwise we're going to have the Arizona kind of immigration law. Somebody had said that in Montana, as much as Montana has its own problems, I think he would have been subject to a recall, depending on what city he was in. Salt Lake, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good. I had a question for Clint.
Okay.
Clint, if you went down to a racetrack and you knew what horse was going to win place and show every single time, a half hour before a single race, would it be a temptation to bet on that race?
Would I bet on that race?
would be a very strong temptation to bet on that race if you know every single time what horse is going to win, place, and show a half hour before post time.
Well, you know, that's a tough question, because then it brings in all kinds of morals, ethics, and values. But if I was in a position where I was in government and I was able to do this type of thing without, you know, my people knowing and being completely, you know, unknowing about it, then yeah, I would. I would take the opportunity, and I would absolutely win on every bet.
Well, the bottom line is, in the marketplace, when you talk about trading, whether it be stocks, currencies, international derivatives, international equities, collective government is the primary shareholder across the board. You know, people have been parrot conditioned, okay, by government to think the corporations are the bad guys. You know, when you have a mortgage, okay, and your mortgage to the hilt, the bank is your ruler. The bank is loaning the money to you to own your house. When government invests in a corporation and they're the primary shareholder, they own that company. And when you have the corporations knowing that government is where the money is, constantly, you know, pitching government, we'll invest in our company, buy our stock, buy our bond issuances, over the last 60 years, government, you know, by investment, became the primary controller over the corporations. In other words, Russia's dream of the 20s and 30s. You know, Russia openly said, "We are the state. We will take care of you. We own everything." And, you know, it just didn't work out too well for Russia. I mean, it just didn't create the correct atmosphere from the population to, toe the line 100%. But in the United States, this is a free country. The public owns everything. The people are the rulers here. Yeah, right, and word only. When you start looking at the actual ownership, whether it be the corporations, a lot of commercial projects, you'll track down government. You know, I used to look out across the city, I'd see all these shopping malls, apartment complexes, townhome complexes. You know, on the surface, I used to say, capitalism at work. When I started learning about government's annual financial report, which listed their investments, and I started looking, I noticed a lot of these apartment complexes, townhome complexes, shopping malls.
There is our break. That's Walter J. Burian. What a trip to have him call in. Thanks, Mr. Burian. We'll be back in about 8 minutes.
Honest talk, serious solutions.
Broadcasting live from the KTKK studios in Salt Lake City, Utah, this is the Jack Stockwell radio program. To contact Jack from Salt Lake City, dial 254-5855. And now the consummate voice of sense and sensibility himself, Jack Stockwell.
Okay, we're going to get right to it this morning, 8:06, and a little change now. Dale Williams standing in for Jack Stockwell, and in studio, Clint Richardson, the incomparable Clint Richardson, the chairman of Utah We Are Change. We're thankful to Jack to give us this opportunity, and we're grateful to the sheriff of Salt Lake County, Jim Winder, who's been willing to join us this morning. It's always impressive to me that somebody will come down into the lion's den, so to speak. And as I've mentioned before, we've had the attorney general down here being interviewed and what have you. I guess you got to have a thick skin, Sheriff Winder, a pretty thick skin to be sheriff, don't you?
Well, it's, by the way, good morning to both you and Mr. Richards. We're thrilled to be here. I don't know how thick it is, but it's, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, people are very interested in their interest is growing, let me put it that way, in the UPD, the Unified Police Department, and, what happened in terms of their local police seemed to be integrated under that, and we thought we'd give you a chance to give your side of the benefits, that is, of the UPD, and see what you thought of it. You're a promoter, are you not? Or you're a believer in it, I would think?
I certainly am, have been for some time, and I think it affords a number of benefits to the community, and more importantly, I think it resolves some problems with the policing model that we've had for for many years. It provides a significant economy of scale, reduces the cost for policing in a day and age when revenues are quickly dwindling, and it improves communication amongst line officers and investigators, so there's a much higher potential for solvability of crimes rather than just emergency response focus. So for so many reasons, I think that the Unified Police Department model is really one that we should embrace. And as you said, it does appear to be gaining traction. We're quite happy about that.
Well, give us an example, if you would, Sheriff, of how, well, let's say someone is, has stolen money from somebody in a city that they don't live in, you know, don't reside in, and then they take off across city borders. Presumably, UPD is a little bit more efficient at chasing somebody like that. Have I got that right?
Well, let me give you an example from my own neighborhood. We neighbor of mine lives two doors up. Last week was the victim of a vehicle burglary. Some individuals going through our neighborhood in the early morning hours broke into her car. It was actually her son's car, but in there, the suspect finds a wallet containing some credit cards. So my neighbor calls Murray Police. I live in Murray, so she calls Murray Police. Murray Police comes out. They do a great job of responding. They take the report of the vehicle burglary, and they indicate in their report that this wallet and contents were taken. Later that very morning, about 2 hours, 3 hours after she wakes up in the morning, about 10 o'clock, she gets a call from a business owner in Salt Lake City saying that her son's credit card is being used at that very moment to make a purchase. So, of course, my neighbor, feeling, aha, here's the chance to get the suspect, she calls Murray Police back and says, hey, you know, my son's credit card that was stolen in that burglary I reported is being used right now. There's a hot lead. And the Murray Police Department, as would most agencies in this valley, said to her, well, call Salt Lake City. It's in their jurisdiction. Now, that kind of frustration is endured by people across this valley, not just in terms of vehicle burglaries, but in terms of domestic violence, where an individual is the victim of a domestic violence in Sandy and moves to Midvale, and now the reports and the follow-up and the investigation and the victim advocacy do not follow that victim. They lose those services because they've had to move out of that particular jurisdiction. What the Unified Police Department says is we live in a valley that has contiguous borders. We don't drive out to Sandy anymore. You drive through Sandy, and you drive through Murray, and you drive through Midvale. And criminals don't know these borders. And it's about time we start approaching law enforcement in a borderless fashion, that when an individual calls and says there's a crime in progress, we don't care what patches on the shoulder. We send the closest unit. We send the unit that is the best trained and equipped and the most reasonably costed because of these economy of skills. That's the example I would use. And those examples happen 50 times a day.
Well, now, question for you, sir. This is Clint Richardson talking. Wasn't that the very model of the county sheriff's department, which was actually dissolved in lieu of this unified police? In other words, you turned all of your, deputy sheriffs, you basically turned those into police officers. They're no longer lawful sheriffs. Instead, they're legal police officers. Now, what?
Well, I'll correct you on two fronts. First of all, they absolutely are still, because they are sworn in by the sheriff, they retain all of the statutory authorities that deputy sheriffs do. My officers that work in the Unified Police Department, uniquely because of statutory changes, enjoy all of the powers that a police, city, municipal police officer has, plus the authority of a sheriff, so they can do things like the civil process service, court security, those kinds of things that are necessary under the sheriff's unique statutory authority. But back to your initial question about dissolving the sheriff's office, yes.
Well, wait a minute now. Does that mean that all police departments have that power?
Anyone that is in the Unified Police Department.
And that is all police, correct?
No. In Salt Lake Valley, the only agencies that are under the blanket of the Unified Police Department are those that serve the communities of Harriman, Riverton, Holiday, unincorporated Salt Lake County, Midvale, and that's it.
Well, I'm seeing unified police on just about every cop vehicle I see now. In fact, I saw a West Valley unified police vehicle.
No, West Valley's not a part of the Unified Police Department. Hmm.
But Sheriff, so you're saying that your men are still deputies?
They have the authority of the sheriff. Yes, they're called police officers. It's very similar to Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is a police agency, but it is managed under the authority of the elected sheriff of Clark County. Doug Gillespie is the current sheriff down there, and all members of the Metropolitan Police Department of Las Vegas have the authority that are ceded to them by the sheriff. So that's the model that we've approached here.
But, well, what I'm a little confused about, you know, I grew up back east, and every once in a while we had all these little burgs back there and little tiny police departments, and you know how it happens. Sometimes you get a guy running that little police department, and he thinks of himself as a little bit like an Arab sheikh or something, and it gets a little abusive. We always had the recourse then to call the county sheriff, and if the sheriff didn't respond as a separate entity, then he had political fallout that he was subject to, you know, in the next election. In other words, how do I call a sheriff's deputy to help me in a hassle, God forbid, that I'm having, say, with a Holiday UPD where I live in Holiday, a UPD officer from Holiday? I mean, it seems to me there's no more sheriff's deputy or sheriff to call.
Sure there is. You call me anytime. You're on the phone with them right now. And and by the way, back east, it oftentimes isn't the sheriff that you call, because eastern sheriffs oftentimes do not have law enforcement functionality. They have been relegated almost entirely to court security and civil process. In the east, most of the time, people deal with the state police.
Yes.
What you will have is township police officers or town marshals, oftentimes they're referred to, and then they will handle all of the quote-unquote lesser offenses, traffic and civil problems, those kinds of things. And then when it becomes a homicide or it becomes a rape or those kinds of things, they'll call the state police. Again, kind of a different model, but here in the state of Utah and in Salt Lake County in particular, there has been no loss of accountability. In fact, there's been an enhancement of accountability. Not only am I elected as the sheriff, so I am subject to the will of the people every 4 years, but I also answer directly to a administrative control board that is made up of mayors of the areas we serve. When I say answer to, in a very real sense, they manage the budget directly and they set policy directives. That is the difference between the sheriff's office of old that Mr. Richardson was referring to in the Unified Police Department. Under the sheriff's office, when people would quote-unquote contract with the sheriff as a city, they would lose all control. They had no real budget authority. They had no policy authority. And that is why you saw community after community leaving the sheriff's contract services, because they were not going to participate in a model that provided them no participation. By creating the Unified Police Department, these cities have very real enhanced control of their law enforcement direction.
All right.
And that's why you're seeing people returning to the model, and we're moving towards consolidation as opposed to away from it.
Let's talk about what this consolidation really is, because, you are in an elected position as protectorate of the people of the county. You're actually the only law enforcement officer, and I say law very specifically, law enforcement officer that is elected by the people. Now, what we are wondering here is, how can you wear that hat as the elected official and also wear the hat of the chief executive officer of a private corporation?
It is not a private corporation. It's an independent subdivision of the state of Utah created by the Utah legislature. It is no more private than the sheriff's office or any municipal.
Really, because the mayor of the county absolutely agreed that it was a private corporation. It is a private corporation.
It is not a private corporation. Sir, a private corporation is funded by private dollars and is held in the public or in the private purview. This is a public entity created by legislative caveat. Here's the example. A mosquito abatement district, a fire authority or fire district, all of these independent subdivisions. In fact, the very cities that we service are independent subdivisions of the state. The city of Taylorsville, when it was created by the legislature, it ceded from unincorporated Salt Lake County and became a city. It did so under the same authorities that we created the Unified Police Department. It created a new subdivision of political entity. So there's nothing private, sir, about it.
Well, we
there's
had
no private participation in it, and no private dollars funded.
We had Mayor Caroon on last week, Sheriff, and I'm not sure that his statement contradicts what you're saying. It's just a few seconds long here. I think we have it on audio.
My guess was private corporation in terms of efficiencies, because we are moving towards a model that is much more efficient than the regular public entity. That would be my guess, but please do play it.
Okay, when we're saying efficiency, that's efficiency for you, but I don't feel it's very efficient for me.
Well, you should. It saved the citizens of this county almost $4 million this year alone. Saved the taxpayers of Midvale City $1 million. $1 million, sir.
But you charged a $175 police protection fee.
No, I didn't charge that at all. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area did. The unincorporated county did. The UPD never charged a fee, sir.
I'm sorry, but that is a special financing district of the UPD.
When you say you created the police...
No, it is not, Mr. Richards. And until you understand your financing models a little better, I wouldn't spout off.
All right, well, here, I'll tell you what. You are quite a slick talker. Let me just read.
I'm just trying to...
You keep interrupting me, sir, and that's quite rude. Let me just read what it says from the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area website under About the SLVLESA. It says the sole purpose of the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area is to provide funding for police services in the unincorporated areas of Salt Lake County. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area does not provide police service. Instead, it forwards revenues to the Unified Police Department, which provides law enforcement service areas to the unincorporated county. The UPD is responsible for all police operations, and the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area was created by unanimous vote of the Salt Lake County Council, not the voting public. The council appointed Jim Bradley, Michael Jensen, and Mayor Peter Caroon to serve as the service area trustees. Councilman Bradley serves as the chair. That's from your own website,
sir. All right, here comes our break. It's a hard break, Sheriff. I'm going to give you all the opportunity you want to rebut. We do have a hard break for commercials. We'll take that break and come back. And we'll let Mayor Caroon weigh in for a moment on this as well.
AM 630, K-Talk. Utah's independent radio voice for 45 years.
All right, we're back to 821 and a little change. It'll be 822 pretty soon. We've got a lively discussion going here with Sheriff Jim Winder, and we'll light Sheriff Winder's line back up here. It's a little audio from last week. We were talking to the mayor about this very issue. Let's play that for a few seconds, then we'll go back and let Jim Winder rebut what Mr. Richardson, my friend Clint Richardson, is saying earlier.
When you say you created the police department, you actually dissolved the sheriff's department and just made that into the police department. Do I have that correct?
Well, again, there's the sheriff's office still exists, and the sheriff still exists, but
the elected sheriff still exists, but he became CEO of the private corporation named UPD.
Correct, and just like I'm the mayor over the Salt Lake County, with the council as my board, the sheriff became the CEO of the Unified Police Department with board members overseeing his actions.
Okay. Any comment on that, Sheriff?
Yeah. Mr. Richardson said private corporation. The mayor didn't. And that goes to my exact point here. Mr. Richardson is making a number of assertions here that are inaccurate. And if you're going to inform your listeners, you ought to take the time to understand what it is you're talking about. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area is a completely separate entity of Salt Lake County. It chooses how to raise revenues to pay for a variety of services. It pays for, the county pays for in its municipal services budget, public works, animal control, law enforcement, a variety of municipal-like services. The county decides how to pay for that. They then forward money to a separate entity created by the legislature called the Unified Police Department.
That almost
it's not
sounds,
a private corporation.
That almost sounds like a cutout, though. I mean, how is what you guys are doing and who you are different than a private contractor at this point? Let's say Z or Blackwater. And I'm not suggesting that the sheriff's department acts like Blackwater, but I'm just trying to understand organizationally how that's any different.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how it's different. One is private, one is public. My board, the people I work for and with, are elected officials of the various cities. It's exactly the same, as I said, like a mosquito abatement board or any special service area designed to function with one particular service level in mind. The Unified Fire Authority operates in exactly the same fashion. What it does is it takes the revenues from the various areas it serves and it puts them into one pool for the public purpose, and it's designated for that purpose. No longer do people pay into the general fund and are told one day that those monies are going to go to police and fire, and instead they end up solar panels or new sidewalks. When people pay money for police and fire, they expect those dollars to go to police and fire. What this model has done is it has absolutely siloed those revenues. So now when the Unified Police Department or Unified Fire Authority goes to the public and says, we need an extra dollar, and we haven't done that, by the way, because our costs have gone down, but if we ever do need to go and ask the public for more money, the public can be assured that every single dollar that transmits to the Unified Police Department through their taxes will go into one service and one service only. And it'll be managed. It will be managed entirely by the very individuals they elected to manage those services.
Really? Are you speaking about the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area?
No.
No.
No, Mr. Richardson, you keep trying to inculcate the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, and in the website paragraph that you just cited, it made my point for me. It is created by the county. It is overseen by county councilmen. It is an independent entity of the county. In the only term in there that they mention the Unified Police Department is transmitting the revenues to the Unified Police Department. Now, Harriman City, who is a partner in the Unified Police Department, they may derive their revenues in an entirely different way. That is not for the Unified Police Department to dictate, because they are an independent city. They can use sales tax, they can use fees, they can use property tax, whatever revenues they like, because that is for that city council and that mayor to determine.
Well, Sheriff, you can Sheriff, you can imagine the position of my listeners, and maybe you're right, maybe I am, and Clint is also adding to the confusion, but we just had the mayor on a week ago. He said that the sheriff's department, he admitted that it was dissolved and that you were a CEO now.
No. Replay the tape.
Wait, Sheriff, please don't interrupt us. We're giving you fair time to talk, so please allow us to talk as well. You know,
very well. Go right ahead.
Well, yeah, and thanks for being a gentleman. And I in my layperson's mind, I associate the term CEO with corporate structure. And I'm just wondering, in the event, and I presume that you're a very responsible sheriff and you know, very rigorous in carrying out your duties and what have you, but let's say you weren't, or the next sheriff is not, and there was some kind of recall or some kind of scandal. If we recalled you as sheriff, would you then cease to be, or would that sheriff cease to be the CEO? How in the heck would that be sorted out?
Now, if I may.
Yes.
You just said that the mayor said the sheriff's office was no longer.
Well, I think Clint asked him if...
Sir, hold on. You said not to interrupt you.
Carry on.
Okay.
On. Yeah.
That is not what he said. He said the sheriff's office still exists. The sheriff is still the sheriff. In addition to those functions, there is now a Unified Police Department. So again, that's my frustration and why I interrupted, is because you continue, as you said moments ago, you're continuing to add to the confusion. This is not that confusing. If I am recalled as the elected sheriff, then I am recalled. And my functions in all public office, including the director, CEO, chief, whatever title you want to use, of the Unified Police Department, is gone. And the new sheriff, who is elected by the people, will take on a variety of roles that I currently manage. I manage court security under one hat. I manage general fund revenues for the jail under another. And I manage the Unified Police Department. I have a portfolio of responsibilities, as do many elected officials. Okay. The governor is a classic example.
All right, so let's read from Fox 13 News. States quite clearly the details of a new Metro Police Force for Salt Lake County, a feat that has taken several years to accomplish, have now been finalized as of January 1st, 2010. The Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office will be dissolved and will be replaced with a new Metro Police Department. The new department will be run by mayors of participating cities. And then in the mayor's report, published October of 2009, it says the UPD will replace the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Patrol Services. UPD will serve certain townships in the unincorporated area. Over and over, I see reports that this sheriff's department, not the sheriff's office, but the sheriff's department, everything else but you, has been dissolved and replaced by something that you are CEO of. If you're CEO of something, you must be in a corporate structure. You cannot be a chief executive officer of anything but a corporate office. You cannot have boards of directors for something that is not a corporate office. Please explain this.
Mr. Richards, first of all, citing Fox News report of a dissolution is not exactly an authoritative source.
I quoted the mayor's report of 2009.
Let's let him rebut. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Mr. Richardson, the mayor's report said patrol services have been dissolved. You yourself just clarified patrol services. Sir, I have 1,000 individuals still wearing sheriff's, Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office uniforms, managing the jail, the courts. And if you want to go up there and see them driving around in sheriff's vehicles with sheriff patches, you're more than welcome to do that.
Williams, if I may, Sheriff. I got a little Halfheimer's going on here. You have to forgive me. I'm getting a little aged. But did you say that there were still sheriff's deputies? Did you say that at the outset?
Absolutely.
Formally, legally, people who are called sheriff's deputies, they aren't just police officers, they're sheriff's deputies.
We certainly have sheriff's officers that are working in courts and in the corrections environment. The only services we transmitted to the UPD was patrol investigations. That's what went into a new Metropolitan Police Department, because they're funded out of a separate source. And again, that's what you gentlemen continued to mix the metaphors. And also, let me just add the final piece to Mr. Richardson, who got on this diatribe about CEOs not being in the public sector. The CEO of the Utah Transit Authority is a public company, sir. And Mike Allegra, who is the director, and I could name a dozen other public CEOs. In fact, many counties have executives. They have chief executive officers, unlike city managers.
And that is a corporate structure.
Oh, sir.
Explain to me what you are as chief executive officer. This does not make any sense. Why would you need to be both? Obviously, if you're the elected sheriff, you have a lot of power. So how can you be both? It doesn't make sense.
Sir, I'm sorry. It's not making sense to you.
Where are corporate headquarters, by the way?
Corporate headquarters, please. Yeah.
Well, it is a corporation. Where are the offices?
Well, we have the Salt Lake County Corporation. We have the Salt Lake City Corporation. Those are our municipalities. Are you going to tell me those aren't corporations as well?
No, not at all. Corporate headquarters, we have a police headquarters building, gentlemen. And this metaphor of the corporation suggesting it's a private entity, I'm telling you, you're misleading your listeners.
Why we have you here, Sheriff.
Can I go to Manta.com, where people look for corporations, and find the Salt Lake, the Unified Police Department of Greater Salt Lake?
Because, as you so eloquently indicated, entities within the state that become independent subdivisions file corporation or corporate documents for incorporation. We have bylaws just like any other, every city.
So you're incorporated.
We are a special service district.
Are you incorporated?
I don't know that, to be quite frank.
Really? You're the CEO of a corporation that you don't know if it's incorporated?
Well, I'm curious, Sheriff, if I have a problem again so a lot of my listeners are Jack's listeners, I should say, are just now coming aboard. So, you know, this is new That last half hour hasn't been heard by some of these folks. If I have a problem, you know, a lot of the federal law enforcement people have gotten a reputation for being really abusive, and they come in very heavy-handed. If I have an incident of that kind where I'm mistaken for a drug seller or some other, I get in a hassle with the ATF, which are notorious for being heavy-handed. Are you saying you will send sheriff's deputies? You will send, you know, let's say I call and you're out of state, or I get your under sheriff or whatever. There are sheriff's deputies that will come out, not UPD police officers, but sheriff's deputies in the traditional role of defending the average person from some kind of abuse, the where the buck stops, as it were. Sheriff's deputies that can come out and help me out.
Unified Police Department officers have the authority of the sheriff.
Well, I take that as a no.
I wouldn't.
You're telling me that there are sheriff's deputies in the environs of the courthouse and some of the traditional roles there. But my understanding is, and I've talked to some of the deputies, I have to tell you, and they say we are no longer sheriff's deputies. See, to me, that's not just a semantical distinction, or a semantic or whatever distinction. There's a traditional American, in fact, it goes back even farther than that, institution where the sheriff's deputy is the and his boss, the sheriff, is the final arbiter in the county for what is legal and what is abusive towards, you know, in other words, the guarantor of our rights. And that troubles me that you have...
We're still in that role, sir. I don't know why you're... If you call for the services that are enumerated under the statute that have been there since 1852 for the sheriff to perform, they are still authorized, enumerated for the members of the Unified Police Department. They are.
How can you be the sheriff? Now, as Dale said, your own former deputies have told us, in confidence.
Well, serving deputies.
Yes, that they are no longer deputies, that they're actually upset because it was their dream to be in the sheriff's department, not the police, not the municipal corporate police, but the actual sheriff's department, and they are now demoted to police officers. This is from your own former deputies. And so the question becomes, yes, we know that you're still the elected sheriff, mm-hmm. But yes, we also know that you're the chief executive officer, which is, I'm sorry, is a corporate term of some other incorporated entity. If you don't want to call an incorporated entity a corporation, okay. How can you wear both hats? How can you be in charge of a corporation that must make profit? In other words, you must write tickets and do these things that you're doing to continue the continuity of the corporate structure, which is the UPD, and be sheriff. That is a conflict of interest. You cannot regulate the very thing that you are the chief executive office for. This is very confusing for people.
Sir, that last comment is so full of holes that, frankly, it doesn't... I don't know where to begin.
Fill in the holes.
Are profit-making, no public entity, especially a police department, is profit-oriented. Now, listen to me, sir. Do some agencies use revenues derived from citations as revenue? Yes, they do. But we are obligated and under the same provisions as any municipal entity to match our expenses to revenues. Now, I'm sure you'll say that is a profit. Look, budgets in government require that we set our budgets. They're approved by our governing boards, and we have to live to those budgets. We don't go out and make a 5 or 10 or 15 or 20% profit and then store it in some bank account. Hold on. That is what private corporations do. That you're right. We don't do that because we're a public entity.
Well, actually, we already disclosed the fact that the county is holding on to millions and billions of dollars in funds. That
those
is
are called segregated fund balances, sir, and they're required by the Government Accounting Standards Boards to ensure ongoing operations.
Oh, that's brilliantly stated, but that's a 10% reserve,
you
have billions.
Sir, they don't have billions. What they do is, for instance, if you're going to build a building, You have to reserve that amount of revenue for ongoing capital expenses. If you maintain a fleet, you have to have the amount of money to ensure that that fleet is rotated. If you have employees that have vacation and sick leave, you have to segregate funds to ensure that if they separate from the organization, they retire or they are terminated, you have to be able to provide them those revenues out. There's a variety of fund balances, sir, that you have to have in government to ensure that the operation continues. Yes, there are those fund balances. That is different than a profit. Nobody in Salt Lake County or in the Unified Police Department or in Sandy City or any other municipality makes a profit and derives the percentage of those profits for personal use.
I would generally agree that could be a true statement if I weren't concerned that you have just federalized the police department.
And we're going to get to that issue.
Federalized the fire department.
Sheriff, we're going to take a few calls. Are you up for some calls this afternoon or this morning?
You bet. I'm going to have to go here in 5 minutes, I think. Spoke to your producer, so I apologize, but I'd love to continue this conversation.
Well, listen, we've got a hard break coming in about 30 seconds. It gives you a chance to take a sip of water. Before you leave, I want to ask about the question of federalization and the fusion centers and all that, and I'd hope to get some calls in, but we can also take calls after your departure. So we have K-Talk Radio, AM 630. We have Sheriff Jim Winder. There are lines available, 801-254-5855. Get you on there today with the sheriff. It sounds like Sheriff Winder will be available till about 8:45 when he will depart. We're going to carry on the conversation afterwards as well. You got to admit, the sheriff is putting up a good fight here and taking some strong challenges in hand, giving as good as he's getting. Let's come back in a minute.
The Voice of Utah. AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
All right, that's us. We're back. It's K-Talk Radio. Extraordinary collision here going on between some very skeptical people with respect to the new UPD formulation for our policing. And the sheriff himself, we have Walter J. Burian, a man of some renown himself, the CAFR one, the expert on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, calling in with a question for Sheriff Winder. Go ahead, Walter J. Burian.
Good morning, Sheriff. I had a question and a quick comment for you.
Yes, sir, Mr.
On the question, was the UPD set up as an enterprise operation?
No, we are not an enterprise fund.
Yeah. Not an enterprise operation, nothing similar to an enterprise.
No, sir, we're a special service area.
All righty. And the one comment, you mentioned on the aspect of the fund balances and the need for certain projects. One of the biggest abuses that takes place is, on turning a profit into an advanced liability. Say, for example, you brought in a $3 million profit. I'm just using this as a figure. And you wanted to not show it as a profit. You can create, we need to build this building, we need to do this, we need to buy that land, and you make up now $3 million in advanced liabilities, thus, poof, there goes the profit. One of the biggest abuses that takes place in government is the ability to bring in revenue and then stash it in advance for liability projects. On the investment funds, the clear thing that needs to be done is a complete review of need versus the ability to just shift monies off to have it build up a power base under an investment fund. Are you willing to take a complete review of all those investment funds?
Oh, absolutely, sir. And I agree with what you're saying. There is a risk. For instance, in an early review of a particular entity that we were dealing with, we noticed that their fund balances were over 100% of their budget. Now, the state requires, as you are well aware, that any government entity maintain fund balances that are, depending on the type of entity you are, anywhere from 5 to 18%. And that restriction is in place to prevent exactly what you're talking about, so that government cannot simply stash the public's revenues interminably and for reasons that are illegitimate. Now, that doesn't prevent, I'm sure, as you've pointed out, that entities don't go and say, okay, we've had a windfall, we call it a profit, we've had a windfall of revenues come in, and we're going to build a, I don't know, a rec center or something. And so they go back to their governing board, whether it's a council or whomever, and they say, let's go ahead and segregate. That's the magic term. Let's segregate those monies into a fund balance for that future need. That in real terms, is doing what you're saying. So there is that potential. I can assure you that in our organization, we fund at the state minimums, and we fund so that we ensure ongoing operations. So, I mean, your point's well taken, and, you know, our model doesn't attempt or claim to solve all of the public financing dilemmas that are out there, but we're managed in a very transparent manner.
Well, we found in the CAFR with Mayor Caroon, we found over $650 million just on air. And he said that the budget of the county was actually $650 million. So that sounds a little more than what it should. But I have a question for you, Mr. Sheriff. You said that the UPD is actually a special district?
Special service area.
Oh, so it's actually something completely non. What company is actually running that then? Because a corporation that's non-governmental.
Sir, look, wait.
Hold a corporation, on, I'm not a corporation in California named, BNBS, is a non-governmental corporation which is running the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area.
No,
so who is running this service area?
It's a bill collection service, sir. And again, for you to mislead your listeners, I tell you, it's shocking. And let me just finally say this, because I unfortunately have to go. But, you know, we started this conversation talking about a model to improve public safety and provide better transparency, better services to the nearly 1 million residents here in this county. And you've turned it, or attempted to turn it, with this obfuscation.
Obfuscation. You've obfuscated my questions at every turn.
Yeah, let him finish, because he's got to run. Go ahead.
This kind of discussion is not helpful. If you truly have facts, sir, I'd love to discuss it. But to just throw out these issues about California and the federalization and the lack of power and CEOs and public corporations. I mean, I don't know why your listeners continue to tune in.
Well, would you come back?
You're not going to talk facts. What is the point of having a dialogue?
Sheriff, will you come back? I know you're under the gun and you've got to run. Will you come back and talk about fusion centers and federal integration and all that business? I would be thrilled to.
Okay. I would hope at that point in time that Mr. Richardson and this gentleman that called in on the CAFRs seems to be very well informed and has his facts correct. It would be nice to speak to those that have a similar ill.
All right, Sheriff, we're going to honor the fact that you have to run, that you say you're under a time restriction, and say thanks for your participation this morning. It's 8:49. That leaves us time to do a lot of things with calls. We've got 7 or 8 minutes in front of us. I believe we still have Walter J. Burian on hand. Let's check his connection. Walter, we've got to have you back as a guest for a full 2 hours sometime.
Well, quick notation, has the sheriff signed off, or is he still on?
He has signed off, but of course this goes into the archive forever, so you know, your comments won't go into the ether.
I can clarify on the UPD from, you know, the take of what I'm getting here. And I had one concern and issue which should be very prevalent if brought up. Now, the UPD was set up as a separate organization, a outside entity, a, you know, separate body.
A special tax district, a financing district.
Now, here's my concern, and I don't think the sheriff can come up with a valid answer for this concern. UPD, you know, the sheriff's office existed. Why was the structure of the UPD not incorporated into the sheriff's office, okay, to give the functionality to the sheriff's office, where in the alternate what they did was they incorporated the sheriff's office into the UPD?
Well, that is the question. That is the question that has been lingering in my mind for the past 51 minutes, and you've articulated it, Walter, is that what was wrong with the sheriff's department to begin with? And I know it was a little bit of a rocky ride for Sheriff Winder, but I do hope he'll come back and develop on that question and treat that question. I found it kind of frustrating talking with Sheriff Winder this morning and inconclusive. I really hope he comes back.
I'll give him a lot of credit. He has a very obviously a very well-trained liberal arts education where he sticks fallacies in left and right, and he's quite good at it. I wish that it was a more honest conversation.
His conversation was honest in the perspective of what he's been instructed as to the organizational structure of the UPD. But I go back to the point that, if, say, for example, you have the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts, okay, if you incorporate the Boy Scouts into the Girl Scouts, now everyone becomes a Girl Scout, not a Boy Scout. Boy Scouts cease to exist, and you still call yourself a Boy Scout. You're now under the auspices of the Girl Scouts. If you incorporate the Girl Scouts into the Boy Scouts, now all the Girl Scouts are Boy Scouts. The Sheriff's Office, I have no objection to giving the Sheriff's Office more powers and abilities, but to incorporate and... the word incorporate, I use it as a loose term. With the CEO and so forth, they've created a structure under the UPD. Even though he said it was not an enterprise operation, I'm leaning towards that's the structure of the Special Service District. But, they did not have to switch the Sheriff's Office under the UPD. They could have given all of the authority, all of the power, all of the structure, all of the abilities of what they created with the UPD to the sheriff.
Well, I think the clever thing that's happened here, Walter J. Burian, is that, and Clint, comment on this, the fund collection function has been separated.
That's why they did it. On the UPD, it gave them statutory ability to collect fees. Taxes, you need voter approval.
Yeah. If you really want to understand what this is, you have to research something called a public-private partnership. And that's what we're talking about here. That is what a special finance district ultimately becomes, where,
the bottom line, Clint, is they gave the UPD the ability to take money from the population, not tax the population, which requires voter approval.
While building in deniability, because the UPD doesn't collect any money. It doesn't get involved. It gets paid. I mean, they get paid, they get funded, but they have nothing to do with the collection of funds or the raising of funds or anything else. It's organizationally separated into that. What is the entity that does the collection?
So NBSGov.com. It's NBS.
All right. Walt Burian, hold on for a second. I'm going to try to bring at least one caller in before they come down and lynch me, and then I'll light your line up. I'm pretty rustic, pretty rough on this phone, and sometimes I drop people. Let's try it. And now we have both. Larry, you had a question.
No, I just have a comment.
Okay.
Yeah, I found the sheriff very combative from beginning to end. Whenever Clint asked him a question, he claimed Clint was accusing him of something or spreading false rumors. That's a typical strategy of that group of people that have a guilty conscience or something to hide. In his case, I think it was both.
Well, Larry, let me give you a little insight into how this was organized. I went out of the way, and I repeatedly told the acting public information officer when I made this appointment for the interview that the sheriff should be informed that this is not going to be some kind of saccharine, polite, softball-throwing interview. And that's why I think he came in with his weight forward and on his toes, weight on the balls of his feet, as it were. I don't really blame him, because I knew he'd have Clint Richards in his lap, and I like things to be fair and out in the open. So it was going to be combative, vituperative, whatever.
And let me just say, I apologize to anybody if I was too. I was starting to get emotional as well, and that's very hard to do when someone is, or not to do when someone is so combative. But everything I was reading from are from either news reports, the mayor's report, from quotes from Jim Winder, which I didn't get to most of it because we were too busy, and it was a very purposeful, combative mode so that I couldn't get to most of my questions.
There's no need for you to apologize for anything.
All right, sir. Thank you. And Walter Burian, we've got about 60 seconds left with you or with anybody else today. You got any final comments? You're talking to several thousand people here in the Salt Lake Valley, and I wish more knew who you were and knew the travails you have gone through, sir, in order to publicize the great wealth of government, the determinative level of wealth reposing in government.
Okay, well, the key point here, I mean, this is the key point. I'm sure all of your listeners, you know, everyone talk, you know, we'll talk about situations, circumstances, and we hear it all the time and debates. I'm sure not one person has a clue at how much the Sheriff's Department brought in cash last year, year before, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, what the increase was in fines, fees, and forfeitures. It's a money operation. Now, when I listened to the mayor's conversation in your last interview.
About 20 seconds, Walter.
I was hoping Clint would ask this question. Clint brought up the point that from 2000 to 2010, there was a 300% increase in the investment funds. And the mayor kept saying, well, we have to keep a 10% reserve. And the question I was hoping to ask him, so you mean that with the 300% increase in the investment funds, that means the budget has increased by 300%?
That's our break. KTKK, AM 630, Sandy, Salt Lake, Ogden, Provo.